Okay, well, hi. I'm going to be talking to you about commodities as I think the next big thing. So if you've never traded before, it's actually a really interesting, easy place to get started. And obviously, if you're experienced, it might teach you something new. And I want to begin, though, by saying thank you very much to Anca and to David for inviting me to present today. And I will tell you a little bit more about myself later on. I really believe that 2021 will be the year for commodities. We've already seen some tremendous start as we've gotten into the second half of 2020. And if you look over here at this little graph, just since November 13th, we have wheat, corn, soybeans, and soft red wheat up 32% to 34%, and that's a month ago. And since then, they've gone up even more. So this is actually something that we haven't seen in quite some time, and I think a great trading opportunity. So I don't want to just talk to you about food commodities, but that will be my major emphasis. So why is this a really good time to even be talking about this? Well, first of all, most people will probably miss out on this whole rally, and here's why. They don't understand how food, soft commodities work, and most are light even on industrial commodities like copper and silver and steel. They don't understand when do I trade futures versus the ETFs. And even so, even if you don't want to trade futures or ETFs, how you can look at stocks that are related to commodities, but that overall, when you're looking at the fundamentals of futures, ETFs, or commodity-driven companies, that it's going to be very different than the way you look at stocks. There's some parallel, of course, but in general, you can actually see them go counter. And also, what's interesting is that the media is starting to pay attention. Recently, just over the weekend, there was an article by Bloomberg about how commodities are going to be hot and how inflation potentially is heating up. And as I just showed you, the move in commodities has actually already begun. So I wanted to show you this because I have guided my subs through many, many trades like this one right here. This is corn. Now, this is the ETF for corn, not corn futures. I find that my members are more comfortable in trading the actual ETF than trading the futures. Not everybody wants to be involved with futures, and they have a reputation as being volatile. Of course, this year, stocks have traded almost as volatile as futures have been. But nonetheless, you have two ways to go. And when you are trading these ETFs that represent the futures of commodities, then you actually always want to refer to the underlying. So basically, what I'm showing you here is why we made the decision to buy it at 13.44. And here, as of the close on Monday, as I'm speaking to you, it went all the way up to 14.52. May not sound like much when you're looking at some of the high-flying stocks, but number one, this is just beginning. And number two is in an ETF that has a very small daily range and very low volume. That's actually pretty impressive. Another one is looking at silver. Now, of course, silver is much more highly speculated, but I'm going to show you how I made the decision after the pandemic swoon to buy it here at 11.88 and how we basically rode it all the way up to get out at an average price between $20 and $22, looking obviously now for a new entry. And also Mountain Pass. Now, Mountain Pass is a good example of a stock that is actually related to commodities. This is rare earth minerals. We got in right after the public offering, actually at 12.15, and we sat with this thing, and we've taken a couple of profit targets, but as of today, this was trading up at 35.50. That's a triple, and that's the reason why I find commodities or stocks related to commodities extremely compelling. It is a way to make a lot of money if you are very patient and you know what to do. So in this presentation, I'm going to help you capitalize on this opportunity that's coming up in commodities. In working with traders, basically, I have found three common things that are the difference between being a successful trader or a struggling trader. One is most unsuccessful traders can't figure out when to get in, when to enter, what's the right time, or they get out too soon, or they have poor or totally non-existent position sizing. And we're going to talk about all three. First, of course, I always like to give the disclaimer. Basically, what this says is, this is education. educational purposes only. You can lose all your money trading, yada, yada, yada. Now you've been duly warned. Okay, so the three biggest obstacles that traders face. One, as I mentioned before, was they can't figure out when to get in. So this results in either missing it, getting in too late, the trade starts to go against you, you start to lose money, and that leaves you feeling frustrated, like a loser, thinking trading sucks. So when you fix this, you will be able to be more comfortable getting in when it makes sense, passing when it doesn't, which will then lead you to becoming a confident and profitable trader. So these are very important to look at, because this happens not only to the newbies, but this actually happens to even the most experienced traders. I am definitely one of those that has either missed it, hardly gotten in too late. I'm usually the person who gets in too early, but we'll talk about that in a little bit too. The second obstacle is getting out too soon. And I would say that this is probably the biggest one. I always like to talk a little bit here about human psychology. And when it comes to commodities, by the way, even more so, because this is a new ball game. It's not like you're looking at a company and you know, oh, there's Apple, I have an iPhone, oh, they're getting into electric vehicles, which they announced today. I like their interface, they're getting into the medical business, let's look at their profits, let's look at their earnings per share. Commodities is a whole other ball game. So not only would it be difficult to time your way in, but it would be also equally difficult to figure out when to get out. And that's why people make a little bit of money and they get out way too soon, which of course then results in leaving money on the table. That's the biggest thing. Losing on a potential winner because you get out immediately as it goes against you, only to see it turn around. Then you wind up chasing that trade for a re-entry, which of course leaves you frustrated, like a loser. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, which is, as a good friend of mine that I see all the time on Twitter says, a major drain on your mental capital. So when you fix this, you will ride trends and keep the wind at your back. And also, most important, little advance, but we're doing a lot of it, especially with commodities, is learn how to add to your winners, which of course will then lead you to become confident and profitable. The third biggest obstacle is position sizing. This is probably the most important aspect of trading. And yet it is probably one of the most least followed aspects of trading. And I am a student of Van Tharp. I have listened to his tapes. I have read his book. And he is really the master of position sizing. But essentially, if you don't know how to position size, what's going to happen to you is what? There it goes. Which results in maybe having too much when you're losing. How many of you have actually added to losers and now you find yourself with this humongous position and it keeps going down? Or just the opposite. You buy a little taste and now all of a sudden it's going up and you've barely made any money because you never position sized correctly when you first got in. Which of course leaves you feeling like you have to trade bigger or you have to trade smaller. It leaves you exposed for unexpected downturns or underexposed if you have a large gap up. And of course, when you fix this, you trade like a professional, you sleep a whole lot better at night, which then will lead you to become confident and profitable. So let me give you a little bit, just a background about me. I would imagine a lot of you already know who I am, but for those who don't, that's me. And I actually have a sweet spot to commodities for a very good reason. I am old enough, 4 decades old enough, to have traded on the commodities exchange floor in New York. I was a member of Coffee, Sugar, Cocoa, COMEX, Mercantile Exchange, which was oil and gas and copper and heating oil. And then I moved over later on in my career to Finex until I finally left the floor. So a lot of commodities trading for me has been basically dormant. There's been runs here and there in gold and silver, but really dormant for a very long period of time. So that is why I'm particularly excited about it. And as a result of being on the floor for all those years, I really learned what we call the floor trader secrets, which is really about understanding momentum, understanding risk, and understanding what's trending and relative performance, not to mention pure price, because I was a chartist. So I also wrote a book called Plant Your Money Tree, A Guide to Growing Your Wealth, which talks a lot more about what I'm going to cover a little bit with you today, which is about phases. And I won an award by Real Vision for a trade pick a couple of years ago. So I have a lot of experience in being here to guide you today. I just thought it would be fun to look here at the floor days. This is a picture of me when I was at Coffee, Sugar, Cocoa. This is a picture of me that actually appeared in Business Week. And the reason why I like this picture is I don't like a big deal of it, but people actually really like to talk about it a lot, which is, as you can see, there's no other women in this picture. There was me in a sea of men. And so, yes, there were other women traders, but there were relatively very few. And here we are in the crude oil pit, and I had been interviewed that day, probably because I was visibly different, about what happened in back in this era, which was 1986, when oil hit a gusher, as it says there, and went to the lows. But more importantly, what I learned on the floor was charting. And what you see here is point and figure charts. And this is really, really important to the whole picture of my process. So I also learned that I don't care if something goes up or goes down, as long as it's trending. And as I started very modestly as a special education teacher going down to the floor with no experience, needless to say, one of the first lessons I had to learn was about risk reward, as in I couldn't risk too much. Now, 40 years later, as I have matured, I am now often on the media, almost every day, in fact, and here's just some of the stations I'm on. I'm a regular with Charles Payne on Fox Business, a regular on Cheddar, a regular on Russian TV, Boom Bust, etc. So I have gotten a lot of experience now talking and teaching in front of a camera, which has been extraordinarily wonderful for me, but also hopefully helpful for all the people that tune in. And I've been talking a lot about commodities, which some of the anchors have said to me, how come we haven't heard about this before? So this is exactly what I'm talking about. I was thrilled when Anka told me that this was going to be focused on commodities, because it is something that equity traders really do not understand. So how do you capitalize on commodities? You must have a rules-based system. You must be able to identify the trend. You must be able to look at the macro, and the macro with commodities might be very different than the macro that you see with equities, although, as again, sometimes they overlap, as in February of 2020, when we just had a liquidity crisis and the macro was horrible because of the pandemic. Everything went down. Everything came to a screeching halt. But the macro on commodities is often ruled by other factors, which will affect the overall market, but they may go counter. For example, geopolitics could actually be very bullish for some commodities, very bearish for the market. Environmental factors, well, they may not necessarily affect the market, but they'll certainly help certain sectors of the market that deal with alternative energy, as we have well seen this year. And it can be very, very positive for commodities. And one thing about commodities, by the way, is that you kind of make money when things are going badly. Notice I just said environmental conditions. Let's say we have bad drought or a frost in coffee during coffee growing season, or let's say we have a war or a coup. None of these things, or food shortages, none of these things are really happy times, generally not for the market, but very good for commodities. And so I've always had to reckon with that, is that I'm making money when other people are suffering. And so I always like to say at this point, one thing that you can do to really be helpful to mankind if you're making money in commodities is do something charitable, especially for people who are suffering. So that's just my little thing. But we also, in our rules-based system, we assess the phase, and I'm going to go into the phases a little bit more. But again, you must know the risk. I can't tell you that I never, ever begin a trade without understanding my risk before I even enter the trade. And as my risk, I also ascertain what I expect my reward to be, and we're going to look at that as well. Plus, as I mentioned before, so key is to understand your position sizing. And then from there, you can plan the entry. And of course, if you're right, you learn to ride the wave so you don't get out too soon. So let's talk a little bit about identifying a trend. Now, in the food trend that I want to focus on here, although I'll cover some other things, essentially, the macro started changing a little bit with COVID. Initially, of course, we saw the crash. But what happened? Food lines, shelves got emptied, supply chain disruption. Then, of course, with people losing their jobs and major layoffs and furloughs, then we had a labor force that was low. And so all these things at first did not come into play, but then come the spring, we started to see food flying off the shelves, production of food going away. Currently, we're seeing ships sitting in the middle of the ocean, not able to dock with food on them. Then on top of that, we had a situation where we had farmers who had such an over surplus of commodities, of food commodities for years, and that's why they were so cheap, stop planting as much. So of course, supply demand comes into effect. And the other sort of other thing to keep in mind as we go into 2021 is that this is the year of La Nina, and La Nina is the sister of El Nino, and she wreaks her own havoc on the environment. And basically the expectation is for around the spring to be a major drought in Brazil and Argentina, as we know, two big regions that grow a lot of the food commodities. Now, we will assess the phase that also. So after I've figured all this out and I'm looking at the macro and I'm understanding why it probably makes sense to look at a particular commodity. Obviously, if we're looking at gold, we're going to be looking at different factors, geopolitics, inflation indicators. If we're looking at silver, we're going to look at those two things. We're also going to look at industrial usage. But each commodity sort of has its own macro. If you're looking at oil, you might follow not only supply-demand, obviously, which the supply has overrun the demand until recently as things have been better, but you're also going to look at things like the OPEC Plus meetings. Are they cutting production? Are they raising production? But that doesn't mean that you have to become a great macro economist. What I always like to say is that what you want to actually achieve as a trader, whether it's equities or stock or ETFs or futures or Forex for that matter, what you want to achieve is the understanding of the macros with the timing of a floor trader. Many, many economists may be talking about inflation now, and they may not be too late to the party. As far as I'm concerned, they're a little late to the party because they're not looking at the technicals. That's why we look at the phases. So let's go back to that corn chart here. This corn chart, I gave you a little bit more history, and I'm going to give you a graph of the actual six phases that we use. But if we take a look at this chart right here, we have two simple moving averages. So the green is the 200-day moving average. The blue is the 50-day moving average. And by the way, you can look at these charts not just on a daily time frame, but you can look at them on a weekly time frame, which I do often, and use those same two moving averages, only instead of a 50-day, it's a 50-week. Instead of a 200-day, it's a 200-week. And you can look at them on a monthly basis. I do not use the same time frames, but I do like to look at a four-chart screen, which is the pivots and the 30-minute chart, the daily chart, the weekly chart, and the monthly chart, because when you step back, that really also helps see what's going on in terms of the macro and the technicals. Now, what you're looking at here is the corn had been in a tremendous downtrend for quite some time. As you can see, this goes back to the end of 2019, so more than a year ago. And here is the big swoon that we had here with the pandemic. And of course, we had one little blip here, but unlike the rest of the market, corn went back down. So in terms of the phases, you'll be looking, I'll be showing you more later, but this change phase from a recuperation phase into a bearish phase, back into a recuperation phase. But we actually started looking at this right here when it started gapping higher, clearing the 50-day moving average, and we actually got into this trade at this level here at 1344. So again, what we're looking at now is if we take a look at where this is currently, it's trading up at 1450. If we go a little bit back in time here to these highs right here, you're looking at around 15, maybe 1475 to 15. And that's going to be a very key area as we go into 2021 with corn. If we get through that, then I would say that we're probably going to go up much higher. If we fail from here, then I would be looking for a buy opportunity somewhere here closer to 14 or where that 50-day moving average is. Now with soybeans, look how this has exploded. Now with soybeans, you had a very different situation, and we got in the soybeans here. We actually got out of the soybeans a little early, and now you can see this thing has run away. So this is what I mean, is that sometimes you just miss things and you don't want to chase if you don't understand your risk. The right place to get back in here was closer to the 50-day moving average. But in terms of phases that we're going to talk about, I just want to mention that really is determined by these two simple moving averages. And there are three things about them that you should know. One is you want to know the position of the 50 related to the 200. Is the 50 above the 200, below the 200? Is it crossing here, which is called a golden cross? Then secondly, you want to understand the slope. When you're at the beginning of a move, obviously in a bearish phase, you're going to see the slope go down, starts to neutralize here. And then as this starts to build in momentum, the slope starts to go up. Obviously the 50-day moving average slope is going to accelerate a momentum faster than the 200. And the reason why, of course, is if you just think about it as a train, if a conductor is pulling 50 cars, he can get up to speed much faster than if he's pulling 200 cars. On the flip side, of course, if he's braking, he's going to be able to brake much faster pulling 50 cars than he is pulling 200 cars, which is why these 50 and the 200-day moving average are often such great support. Institutional investors look at them. But nonetheless, look at this. If this is any sign now of what's going to happen with the rest of the food market, just look here at soybeans. And of course, who is the biggest consumer of soybeans is China. And China certainly had its issues this year with supply chain disruptions and also tremendous demand coming back. And also they have had some problems with Australia, and that's affecting some of the grain, not so much in soybeans, but in other things. So anyway, the point is that if this doesn't look inflationary to you, I don't know what is. Now let's go a little bit further into the phases, because I think it's really important to understand, and how do I get rid of this thing up here? I want to get rid of this. Well, all right. Above euphoria, it says the word bullish. So I think it's important to understand, because this is really going to help you with your market timing. So obviously what we just saw with soybeans was a euphoria stage. What we saw with corn, though, was a very different phase. With corn, we're in a bullish phase, but not nearly in the euphoric stage. So with a bullish phase, you want to see the 50 over the 200. You want to see the slope on both positive. And ideally, when you're getting in, you want to get in as close to the moving averages as possible. What's the reason why? What's the second thing I mentioned to you? Risk. The further the price is from the 50, the more risk that you have. Now, what could happen, of course, and what we've seen is a euphoria turn into caution, which is when now the price drops below the 50, but the 50 is still above the 200, and that's when you start to see anxiety come into play. And from there, we have a distribution, which means now literally that money is being distributed out of the market because of fear and into cash. And that is exactly what we saw in February of 2020. And then, of course, if things go bad to worse, and by the way, the 50 is still above the 200 here, you might just start to see negative slopes, but the price is below both moving averages. And then finally, what you'll get in this situation is what we call a death cross. This is where now the 50 crosses below the 200. That's your bearish phase. And that's really when we're in a position of despair. Now, I have to tell you, that's actually, I wouldn't say my favorite time, because again, that makes me sound sort of dispassionate. But when I say favorite time, it means to me that at some point, that bearish phase will end. Now, that's a dangerous way to think as a passive investor, but as an active investor, you want to wait for that to happen. So when I was watching all these commodities go way, way, way down, understanding what could happen with COVID, understanding that the Fed making the interest rates so cheap, not just here in the United States, but also throughout central banks in the world, understanding that the dollar, which is definitely related to commodities, was also declining, all of this while these commodities were in a bearish phase, got me really juiced up to wait for the bearish phase to end. And that's why when you saw in silver, I pounced even before the bearish phase end. That's why you saw in corn, I waited for the recuperation phase to come. And that's exactly what the next phase is. This is when in equities, we say hope returns, but now the price starts to move a little bit above the 50-day moving average. The 50 is still below the 200 like that, but the price starts to, let's put it here, starts to move above the 50. And what you really want to see now is that slope start to neutralize. And then of course, you're in a situation where you have a very tight risk. And if you're right, you're going to get into an accumulation phase. Now the price is above the 200, although the 50 is still below the 200. And then eventually when optimism returns, you get back into a bullish phase and there's euphoria. And it's important to really look at these six. They're very easy. This is so easy that I have been able to teach my six-year-old grandnephew this, because it is really simple to understand. Ah, there's the green, there's the blue, where's the price, how's the slope? These are simple concepts, and that's what I love about it. So let's talk now a little bit about risk and reward, and we'll show you some charts as well. So how do I determine the risk? Now you could see that I've already had an idea of my mind of the actual macro trend, what I'm expecting to happen in commodities. I had a lot of material to work with of why I thought commodities was going to reverse. By the way, the commodities to equities ratio, as we came into 2020, I started talking about this in January, because in 2020 January, it was at 100-year low. The ratio was 100-year low, which means equities were so far ahead of commodities that I had just the sense, the timing sense, that I was, if I were patient enough, I would start to see that reverse. But that's only one thing. I also had to wait for the right phase, and I also had to understand what my risk is. Now, it's just very easy to say, oh, I'm going to buy it here over the 50, and if I'm wrong, I'm going to get out here. But we've actually given you a little bit more of a finite system using ATR. And that's the average true range. So what does that mean? That means that every single instrument, no matter what it is, whether it's an ETF, whether it's an equity, whether it's a futures, whether it's a Forex, whether it's Bitcoin, whatever it is that you're trading has an average true range, or a range that it trades on average every day. Some of these little tiny commodity ETFs, they trade only 12 cents a day. And you get something like Tesla. Tesla can trade $63 a day. So that's why it's so important to understand, because what we do is we use a multiple of the average true range to determine risk. So let's say, for example, that something has, just for argument's sake, to make it easy, a dollar range. We may risk 2 to 3 times that, or $2 to $3 on that particular instrument, especially if we're getting in and we're only 2 to 3 ATRs away from a major moving average, or we see some other particular chart pattern that looks compelling to us, and we know that that chart pattern will get violated, and that's only 2-3 ATRs away. If I have to risk more than 2-3 ATRs of the instrument, then most likely I will avoid the trade. I am not a person that ever suffers from fear of missing out. I've just been doing this too long, and understand that things set up all the time, and the more patient you are and the more precise you are, the better the result is going to be. Now, of course, the other part of that is to understand the reward, the risk reward. So we like to look at a minimum, and again, a lot depends on the market condition, but the minimum of a 2-to-1 risk reward. So obviously, if I'm risking $2 to $3, I want to make at least $4 to $6 before I even consider taking some profit. And I will take profit, particularly if the market is volatile. Again, this is where the market conditions might dictate. However, if we're really trending tremendously, like let's say more in 2017, because this year has been kind of hard to, people are still scratching their head on how we managed to go to new all-time highs. But nonetheless, then I might go more to 3-to-1 to 4-to-1 before I take my profit target. And then my next tranche will literally be anywhere from 5, 6 to 8 ATRs, and then I'll take my second profit target. And then we leave a tail. So I mentioned to you what was a mistake people make all the time is they get out too soon. How do you prevent yourself from doing that? Is by taking profits at these ATR parameters, leaving your tail, leaving a wide enough stop on that tail so you can live through some of the volatility, like today, for example. And yet you don't want to lose money on that trade, but staying with that trade so if it continues to go up, you continue to make money. And then, of course, the position sizing. So I mentioned that before. Well, really, I'm going to give you a little bit of meat on that. So I like to say that you should never risk on any given trade more than 0.5% to 1% of your overall equity, right? So if you're trading with $100,000, just to keep it even money here, 0.5% is $500. Obviously, 1% is $1,000. That's per trade. Now, it also will depend on how many positions you have. If you have 5 positions, then it probably is okay to risk 1% on each one. But if you have, like what we have in our portfolio right now, 14 to 15 positions, then unless they start making money and I now have smaller positions because I've taken profits, etc., then I may only risk that 0.5% on new trades that I put on. The whole point is everything goes to hell in a handbasket, and you get stopped out because, I don't know, whatever happens, a pandemic, for example, you don't lose more than 7 to 10% of your overall equity at any given time. So when I mentioned passive investing, I will never allow us to lose more than 5 to 10%. I rather get out, wait for the worst to be over, and then get back in at much lower levels. Okay, so now let's talk a couple of trades here with some ATRs and put this all together, not to mention also keeping it on focused on the commodities. So I mentioned to you here about coffee. Now, there are 2 ways to trade coffee. There is actually coffee futures, which is where I got started on the floor as a coffee trader. It's not a heavily traded commodity. commodity the way, say, gold or oil is. But nonetheless, it could be a lot of fun, especially during frost season in Brazil, if you happen to be long, and it goes limit up. But most of us do not trade the futures anymore, or certainly my members do not trade the futures. So we are using JO, so aptly named, as an ETF to track coffee. Now, what's so interesting about coffee is that it's seasonal, of course, partly. Very, very prone to environmental issues, drought or frost in Brazil. But also culturally has some impact. Like, for example, China, which used to be mainly a tea drinking country, has now started to drink coffee. Starbucks was a huge reason why coffee all of a sudden became more popular, because you could go into Starbucks and get a gourmet cup of coffee. So all these things kind of bring into play why I even like to trade coffee. But let's look at this thing, how crazy it's been on the phase. So you can see that as we were coming into this year, I don't have the whole year here, but we started out in a bearish phase. Well, actually a distribution phase. Here was your death cross here. We immediately went into an accumulation phase and then a bullish phase. It broke immediately into a distribution phase, then back into a bearish phase. And I just watched all of this go by, because at this point now I was interested in other things. I wasn't even having coffee on the radar. But then it started to get my attention. And it started to get my attention right here when it gapped up. So we made our first trade in what we called that recuperation phase. Now let's talk about risk. JO has an average true range of 92 cents. So that means from the low here, which was about 32.50, to where this was, the blue line or the 50-day moving average, which at the time was around 31, that means I could risk about 1.5 ATR. So I was good. I was golden. I knew that I would be okay. Which also means that if I was risking $1.5, let's say, I was also going to make $3. So that means I was looking for this to go from 32.50 up to 35.50, which it did. But we got out here when it faked us out, and then we didn't buy it again. Again, we got interested in other things at that point. So this is where I tend to be early. I've been watching coffee as we're getting into all of this, because I've been reading more and more and more about Brazil as the major coffee growing region, going to have some drought issues, and some of the coffee producers have really basically almost gone down to a bare bones minimum in terms of how much they're producing. Not to mention a lot of the workers that work in the coffee fields were going on strike. And these are all things as a commodities trader you keep your ears out for. So what I really want to show you here now is we're actually long, and we actually even added to the position. But more importantly, what you want to look at now going into 2021 is keep your eye on this. Our winter is Brazil's summer. And so that means, remember I told you La Nina? You want to keep an eye on this in our winter. And I mean like winter people who actually have a winter in the United States. Because in Brazil, if they go into drought around March, April, May, you could see this thing fly. So keep in mind your risk, your reward, your average true range. Right now, we're a little far from these moving averages, so you may want to be a little patient, but this is definitely something I would keep my eye on. Sugar. Now, I love to talk about sugar. It's probably one of my favorite subjects, because with sugar, it was my very first trade I ever made on the commodities exchange. Very, very first trade. And my very first trade, by the way, was a loser, which everybody patted me on the back and said, congratulations. Now, look at the ATR. Now, obviously, this is the ETF and not the underlying future. So here, if I could find my cursor, here we go. We have an ATR of only 10 cents. So this doesn't move very much. But the reason why I'm showing you sugar is because it's an interesting secret barometer for inflation. And so what that means is that silver gold, people talk about that ratio when silver starts to outperform. Gold is a barometer of inflation. Nobody knows about this one. And the reason why is it was the first to go up in the mid-70s before we went hyperinflation at the end of the 70s into the early 80s. It's something that is also environmentally affected with beets or sugar cane. It could be affected by, drought, etc. And also, it has been the victim of coups in my lifetime. And also, furthermore, it was actually really cut back in terms of how much plantings there were, because there was just such a glut of it, especially after all the press. So when you have hard times, people turn to sugar. And what's interesting now is look where this is. This was your golden cross right here. It's following a 50-day moving average. This is something that doesn't look like it's too late. And if you wanted to ascertain risk, obviously when you have a 10 cent ATR, you may want to risk just a little bit more than 2-3 times. I would say at this point, you have a pretty good opportunity to get a risk down to around this most recent low, which was probably at around 625, or use the 50 at around 637. So that's a little trading tip there. Okay, so you have the rules-based system, you plan the entry, you ride the wave. Okay, so here's silver. And with silver, when we were looking at this, I started having my thesis about inflation already. I was early. I'd say my bad is that I tend to be early, which is why I can probe and lose money a few times, but I don't care. Because when I get it right, because I understand my risk and I keep it tight, when I get it right, I more than make up for that. Okay. So when I saw this formation, remember I said sometimes it'd be chart patterns and not a phase. This to me was a classic island bottom. And when silver gapped up, we got in at 1188, even before the phase changed. But here's a situation where once the slope started going positive and it cleared over the 200, added actually to the position, and then rode this thing up. Now, I will tell you, understand right now, the ATR, by the way, is 53 cents. I did not get in here. I thought about it, but this thing has been choppy. And so I've waited. And at this point now, I'm either looking for a dip or I would be looking for it to clear and fill this gap up here that it left. And then I would buy the next dip. So that's just something else to be watching for. Another great indication of inflation. Here's steel. Here's another one. Steel had been in a tremendously long bear phase and then again fell with everything else. Went into a recuperation phase early, had a fake out of an accumulation phase, but look at your negative slope here. Went back into a bearish phase. And it really wasn't until this area right here as the slope, and you could see this was going to start meeting the 200 and get the golden cross, that you had the opportunity to go long here at 870. And as you know, this thing has been flying. Will this continue to fly? If things go the way they are, it will. Okay, so I just want to give you, I will have plenty of time to show more charts at the end once I just tell you a little bit about how you can learn more about this and work with me as we get into this exciting period of 2021. So every day I confidently identify big trend opportunities. Right now, of course, we're focusing on commodities, but I do this in pretty much every single sector of the stock market. I never really worry about the next big correction, obviously, because either I'm prepared for it or I really understand how to keep your risk to a minimum, how to move stops around. And I really have enjoyed my own wealth. I started out as a poor postal worker's daughter, special ed teacher. I really love helping people build their wealth. So essentially what I'm doing in my service called Mrs. Market Minute Premium is I'm teaching you, but I'm also giving you real-time trading alerts. So you get a text and you get an email at the exact time of execution. Buy it here. Here's your risk. Here's your reward. And here's your ATR. So I'm really just basically saying, follow me. You don't have to think on your own if you don't want to. I will tell you exactly what to do. And that in of itself is a $1,997 value. So I give you that entry price, stop loss price, and targets. And what's really interesting for people who like to trade options, and I know a lot of people that are here today do trade options, is that you can then execute your options, whether it's an at-the-money call or you want to go a little bit above the money. And then you can use either the actual equity itself or the future itself for your stop losses, et cetera, or you can just trade the options. But I make it very easy for you. And what it does is it gives you the idea of how to manage your trade like a pro. As I said, these mistakes that people make, get in the wrong time, get out too soon, have their losses too big, and their win is too small because of position sizes, this is what I will help you avoid. And then every night I do analysis where you get an email, a special email, with not only what our positions are doing, any changes I may make in the position, but also any things that I'm looking at the next day. So you get a heads up of what to watch for. And I give you specifics on that. If it clears this, buy it here. Here's your risk, etc. Plus, I also cover a lot of these commodity ETFs that you don't see in Mrs. Market Millie Daily that is posted on Twitter. And so really, essentially, I also on top of that become your tutor. And so I do two videos a week. One is just a regular training video, but one is live coaching. So every Thursday, you get to be with me in a live coaching session. I will answer all your questions. I will put up every chart you want me to look at. I also go through a lesson, whether it's how to use an opening range, how to use the phase, how to adjust your risk, how to use the pivots, etc. And that is a $497 value. So really, you're constantly hearing from me. You never are mysterious about what I'm thinking. And those of you who know me know I use a Modern Family a lot. We're not going to get into that now, but that's really what I consider to be the key macro indicator of what the overall market is doing, because it's one index in five sectors that track that. So I make make it very, very easy and personable. You also, for those who like to trade themselves, get 2 scanners every night. And that's a $9.97 value. And basically, everything I just talked about with you here, these phases, you get to see when it lights up, whether it's changing phases to something more positive. These are the long setups. You also get one for the bearish setups. And it tells you what the ATR is, what the sector is, if they had a range expansion. And sometimes it tells you, like what we saw in silver, is it a glass or brick wall bottom, or is it a glass or brick wall top? And then for those who like to time their way better or faster, more active traders, it also tells you how many days it's above the 10-day moving average. Sometimes I get my ideas from here, and other times I just get my own ideas, and you can use your ideas, or you give some people like to give me a heads up. And what also makes Market Gauge really fantastic is that we never leave you hanging. We have phone support. You get on a phone with an actual person. We have live chat on our website. You can email me or Mary, our customer service. And because I'm on Twitter all day long, many, many people like to direct message me on Market Minute. That also has huge value at $2.97. So if you put this all together, the alerts, the analysis, the videos, the trade scanner, and the support, that would come to a value of $4,785. But of course, the fact that you guys are here with us today, I will give you all of that for $997 for the year if you could just go to www.marketgauge.com/premium. Now, some of you prefer to speak to a person, and that would be Rob Quinn. So if you want to jot down this phone number and talk to somebody about what I do or our other products, then simply call Rob at 407-770-7637. Now, that's not all. I'm also, because you're here today, going to throw in there 3 fast action bonuses, and we're going to look at them here. So one is called Trading Essentials, and Trading Essentials is going to give you information about some of the other things I mentioned briefly but didn't have time to cover today, like, for example, momentum and relative performance. So this really helps you not only understand how we use momentum and relative performance, but it also really gives you an idea of how we use the pivots, the opening range, the phases, etc. And these you keep for life, and that's a $497 value. I also give you a position sizing tool in a trade journal. So everything I'm talking about, 0.5% or 1% of your overall equity, rather than sitting there thinking, oh, gee, I'm only going to risk 500, so how many shares do I buy based on what you told me the stop is, this automatically calculates it for you, which is great. Not to mention gives you a journal so you can keep track of all the trades. And that's a $197 value. And finally, you get my phase trading bootcamp. And that is actually a session live in the market where you really get to hear me explain how we're putting on trades and how we're managing positions all live. And that is another value that brings the whole value up to $5,576, again, for the same price for a year for $997. And once again, marketgauge.com/premium, and there's Rob's number. So because we have some time left here, about 10 minutes or so, I thought I could show some live charts, but also answer some questions. Now, I don't know, David, can I see the questions, or do you want to share questions while I'm busy going to a live chart?
Are you able to see the chat window?
I could try to see the chat window. Right now, I'm actually, here's my live chart, so let's start with that. And is this chat? Here we go. Oh, it didn't show up anywhere. I'm sorry. Could you read the questions to me?
Let's see. Mine is showing up. Hold on just a second. Andy asks, what makes the dollar strong or weak, the Fed, and how does the dollar affect commodities and the equities markets?
Oh, what a great question. Okay, well, first of all, the dollar is still, to this day, the world's reserve currency. So even though it's lost a lot of value over the course of this year, it's still in much higher reserves and much more used than, say, the euro. In fact, it blows the euro away. However, because of a lot of the shenanigans that have gone on in this country, a lot of political infighting, the election that was highly contested, et cetera, et cetera. It kind of made us lose a little face in the world. And so a lot of the countries have stopped using the dollar, not enough to make us panic at this point, but it's something to be aware of, particularly as European community and even the China community is talking about digital currency, number one. And number two is another phenomenon that came back huge, especially lately, of course, being Bitcoin. So the dollar is definitely under seas, no doubt about it, and something that needs to be watched. Now, I could actually show you, by the way, since I'm in stock charts, since we're talking, let's look at the dollar. So you can see, by the way, in terms of phases, the dollar, once it broke down into a caution phase and the death cross into a bear phase, it's had a couple of attempts to get back into a recuperation phase, but it's all the way down here. And maybe it's bottoming out, we don't know. But nonetheless, the relationship, yes, obviously is interest rate sensitive. As the Fed continues to pump money into the system, and we start to see this huge rise in the money supply that we have seen, that's historical highs, that also devalues the dollar. And that's why people are starting to think about inflation, because with the Fed saying things like, we're going to keep interest rates low until the economy comes back, that generally means that so will the dollar stay low. Now, what makes the dollar go up? Things like war actually make the dollar go up. Obviously, if the United States outperforms the emerging markets, makes the dollar go up. So at this point now, where the dollar may have temporarily bottomed because it got so hammered, but I would not necessarily say that I would find the great future in the dollar right now. If they have any kind of a sustainable rally here, I would be looking for another short opportunity, as I said, because I think alt currencies eventually is going to replace this. And the younger generations really don't even want to use paper money anyway. So that's something to be aware of. And that's why I think 2021 could be the year for inflation, the year for commodities, but it may not necessarily end in 2021. It could be at the beginning. When we were trading on the floor, inflation went on not just for a year. It went on for 2-3 years until the Fed had to come in and do something. And what they did, of course, was jack up those interest rates to our ridiculous levels. Okay, good question. Any other questions?
This is also from Andy. How does, from when you were talking about coffee, how does the price of coffee futures affect the price of Starbucks and
another good question. Like, well, again, you're always going to talk supply demand. Let's just think of simple economics. You learned it in high school, right? So if there's plenty of coffee around and coffee's cheap, that's going to help Starbucks because they don't have to raise their bottom line prices. And while they're buying coffee from the countries that they're buying coffee from, and by the way, we grow some in the United States, but not too much, then that bottom line price is going to stay low. And what you hope as a consumer is that they keep that bottom line price to you. That could flip, which is why it's so interesting to look at commodity companies, related companies like a Starbucks, because if we get a shortage, a freeze, a drought or anything like that to the coffee crops, and that forces the coffee to go up. By the way, commodities was started as a hedge for farmers. So if that happened to, let's say, corn farmers, which was the very first commodity that ever traded in the 1800s, they had the ability to hedge in the futures market. They knew they were going to have a bumper crop, then they would actually short the futures. And if they knew they were going to have a real undersupply or a drought, then they would buy the futures. Starbucks may or may not be doing that in the market. We don't know. But nonetheless, it would mean higher coffee prices, which of course would then mean, do people want to pay even more money for that $4 latte? Next question.
All right.
I just want to show you one thing because I mentioned something, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it. The relationship between the commodity ETF and a company that trades it. So I want to show copper here for a second. As we know, copper and steel went crazy this year, and wood has gone crazy this year. So that's why now you're starting to see the press talk about it. And here is JJC. This is the ETF. Obviously, if you can trade copper futures, that's going to be a little bit better because you can see when you see these little dots here, it's telling you, and by the way, JJC has an ATR of 0.80, that it's going to be obviously a thinner instrument to trade. But looking at a company, then you want to look at something like Freeport-McMoRan, which is a company that deals with copper, which this too, by the way, is a small ATR, average range of 81 cents. But you can see how that flown. And by the way, if you follow these faces, look how clean they were here. And then when it retraced to the 50 here, and now, of course, it looking's a little bit extended, so you have to use a different time frame if you don't want to be a long-term swing trader. But nonetheless, that's why I'm saying it's good to look at the companies because the opposite of Starbucks, if the copper prices go up and people need copper because they're building homes and we're still starting to see a housing boom, or we're seeing a huge boom, let's say, in something like China, where they're still building a lot up in the cities and trying to move people out of places where they make no money and put them into the cities. As long as that continues, you're going to see the companies do well too. But always look for that departure where the commodity continues to go up, but the actual equity starts to go down, and that's because of inflation. Okay, now go ahead. Whatever time you want to give me, I'm happy to answer any more questions.
Okay. Let's see. Why are you using X for steel instead of SLX?
Basically. Just because I'm used to it. Okay. Let's take a look at SLX. I mean, you know, you tend to learn a personality of something, and that's mm-hmm. the main reason. I mean, you could see the charts look actually very similar. So yeah, I mean, trade what you know. That was the old Peter Lynch expression. And if I'm trading something I've never traded before, now I got to kind of learn how it behaves. So X, I know how it behaves. But anyway, go on. Next
okay.
question.
Do you use the commitment of traders reports in your strategy at all?
I hear it. Obviously, I read everything. So I know if there's a commitment of traders where they're completely bullish or completely bearish. I look at all that stuff. We have indicators and market gauge that help us determine that as well. But it might excite me for something like, here's a trade, Scorpio Tankers. It's not a commodity, but it's related to commodities because they basically are tankers that carry oil. They don't carry food, but they are for rent for carrying other types of commodities besides food. So heavily shorted that this will intrigue me, especially as it changes a phase here. That's how I may refer to it, but otherwise, no, it's not going to be the most important thing on my mind.
Oh, okay. We're almost out of time. Oh, okay. We're
kind of out of time.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if you really want to learn, I could say this again, www.marketgage.com/premium, or that number. I would imagine that you'll be able to access that number. You can ask me or ask Dave, and I'm happy to give you the number of Rob Quinn, who'll be happy to talk to you. And then you'll be ready for 2021 with me.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right.
Great presentation today.